Valencia working relatively quickly. He is ready again for the 2-2. And here it comes. Strike three, call. Cubs win the ball game. Daniel Palencia strikes out the side. And now Wilson Contreras being restrained by some of his teammates.
I don't know what Wilson, you know, there are times where he just does these things and you don't know, have any understanding why. And we saw it in Chicago, and, you know, it's not like the Cubs are going to try to hit him and bring the tying run to the plate. That's for sure.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. There you go. That is the voice of the great Ron Coomer, and we love his analysis, and Pat is the ultimate professional, and goodness gracious, what a great broadcast those guys do on a regular basis every single day, and we're delighted to get out to Houston and bring in Ron Coomer, the Cubs radio analyst. He joins us on the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire, Aturo.com. Hey, Ron, how are you this morning?
I am doing great, Mikey. David, how are you boys doing?
Doing well, Coom.
You know, it's fun in a way because, as you know, our resident producer here, Dustin Rhodes, lives and dies on a regular basis with the Cubs. And he was as despondent as I've seen him after the first two games of this series. And today, he's singing songs. He's skipping in the hallways.
He's facing better again now.
Oh yeah. The world has been righted in Dustin's eyes.
D, I love it. I love it, D. But, yeah, baby.
See, but Ron, I mean, it really has been righted. You know, you go 20, you lose two games, then you shut them out for 22 innings. You get a great outing. To set up the return of Shota, and he was everything you hoped he would be. He was the guy. It was like he never hurt a hamstring. He was fantastic yesterday.
He really was. I think the whole thing is set up by Boyd's outing. You
right.
know, when there's sometimes, you know, Mike, when you really, you know, you really need a good outing from your starting pitcher. That was one of those days, the game three of that series. And Matthew came out there, and, you know, he's got a unique fastball. That his two-seamer at the top of the zone that runs across the zone away from the righties into the lefties. He's got to have, you know, they don't pick it up. There's got to be some deception. And then he can run it inside. But he just, you know, I don't know if there were too many hard hit balls the whole game against him in six innings, maybe one or two that they barreled up. And then Shota, as you said, came out. I had a chance to talk to him yesterday as we got here into Houston. And I asked him, I go, how's the leg? Oh, it's good. You know, you had a great fastball. Yeah, good fastball yesterday. He had a good fastball to the righties inside. He wasn't overly thrilled about his split. And the movement of his split was going more sideways than it was down. So that'll be something he'll work on. But he was like, yeah, hold on. And you don't see many guys spend 2 months on the injured list, pitchers in particular, starting pitchers, and come back and be just as sharp as the day they left. That was amazing to me.
So, Ron, have to ask you, because of the way we came into this segment, the disgust in your voice was obvious. Wilson Contreras is somebody that has triggered you before, and he might trigger you again as early as next week.
Oh, I'm
but
sure of it.
How do you explain what happened, the little brouhaha, as we have called it, at the end of the game? And Daniel Palencia, did he go too far? I just thought it was his emotions, and it was fine, and it was just the way that most closers will celebrate after a save that dramatic.
Yeah, I think Daniel, at the end of the day, was reacting to multiple things. One, a big save against Cardinals. And then also Wilson chirping at him from first base the whole time he was at first. He was chirping. So, you know, and then, you know, and for a young guy, then it's like, okay, it's time to shut up. I shut you up, you know. They get it. The thing is, I get that Wilson got upset immediately after getting hit by a 100-mile-an-hour fastball. That just happens. I mean, you get, like, raging mad instantly. because the guy's throwing a projectile at you and hits you at 100 miles an hour.
It hurts.
But then once you're, yeah, it hurts. It hurts a lot. But once your brain and the logic of, you know, using your brain kicks in, you go, well, they just brought the tying run to the plate. They don't want to do that. So you put your head down and you walk to first base and shake it off the pain. But you know that they're not doing that on purpose. You know what I mean? So I understood that. But he can't – that last step doesn't happen all the time. And he gets – you know, he lets his emotions take over and it just continues to take over. And even Burleson, who was standing on second base, is like, Wilson, calm down. He's giving him the old hands down, like, relax. You know, you're going to get picked off first base and the game's going to be over. And I even said that on the air. I'm like, I was hoping Michael Bush would back pick him from the pitcher because Wilson was so hot that he just wasn't in right frame of mind to be running the bases. But they didn't, and it ended up Daniel got the strikeout, and that worked out great.
And I don't say this lightly, but I wonder, are you doing yourself a disservice by showing that sort of out-of-control emotion? Because if I'm in a tight game and I know something's going, if you accidentally hit him or if you throw at him, you know the guy's going to lose his stuff. I'm just saying that's not a message I would want to send out to Major League Baseball.
Correct, 100%. We all have been there where we lose it a little bit, and you gotta get it back, I guess. Here's the example. Ohtani got hit in Los Angeles last week when they were playing the Padres, and it was going back and forth with the beanballs.
Right.
In the last one, the dugout, they're jumping over the railing of the dugout, his team, to protect him, and he waves them back, go back to the dugout. Let's let this be over. Done. Okay, we're done. So, you know, I don't know if I could have went quite Ben Ohtani in that situation.
That's a great comparison, Coombe. That's a great contrast.
But that's the thing that you go, okay, this has got to be over because this isn't good for our – if you're the best team, that's not good for your team getting drilled all the time and drilling them. That's not good. You know, so that's the difference.
So let's go back a couple nights. We had a lot of conversation about Pete Crow Armstrong – and his just mental mistake in center field when he thought that there was three outs and he did a little pirouette and runner scored from second base. And then later in the game, I feel like it was an even maybe a worse decision to bunt with runners on first and third in that situation when you are the cleanup hitter. How did you think the Cubs handled that with Craig Counsell? He said he texted him after the game but didn't really make a big deal about it. There are some managers who might have made a bigger deal about it. What did you think about the way the Cubs handled it?
I thought it was fine. I got no problem with what Counts did. I think Counts does a pretty good job of understanding his players. And you know, at the end of the day, you really need Pete Crow Armstrong to play great baseball. So the last thing you want to do is be, you know, old school crusty manager and rip him a little bit, you know. So and then have him go down, and his confidence go down, and we're seeing his confidence down, right? I mean, he's doing it to himself. We saw that the last two ball games since that's happened. You know, he's beating himself up over some of this and trying to do a little too much, and you know that's one of those things, and that's him. You know, you're going to have that. I don't think you have to do much to Pete as far as, you know, getting on him at all. I think he's a young guy that wants to succeed so bad and be great that he's one of those guys you've got to constantly try to make sure that he's up and playing with confidence and kind of in that positive frame of mind. Because, you know, I've seen it the last few days. He's just beating himself up over a few plays. And in 162 games, we're going to have some bad days. It's just the way it is. You got to turn the page.
Ron Coomer on the Score is sponsored by Huntington, home of early pay. More at huntington.com/yourmoney. I'm curious, Ron, when you think of Kyle Tucker back in Houston, what does that say to you? Will he? Do you have a little something else? Do you have a little extra oomph when you're going against a team that you one time played for? Is it not sort of a natural way to feel about things?
I'm glad they traded them to us and we're here. Put it that way. I got traded from the White Sox to the Dodgers, and I hit more home runs against the White Sox than any other team in baseball. So that would be an absolute yes. I think it's just human nature, right? I mean, we all, you know, and he was a star player here and kind of, you know, made his way in the league here in Houston, and, you know, they traded him away. So, you know, I would, and I love the fact that he's, you know, somewhat rested, counts as getting him some days where he's DHing instead of, you know, playing right field. So you're giving him a little mental break somewhat. So I think he's pretty rested. And when he's rested, you see his bat come alive. I expect him to have a really good series this weekend.
Yeah, I think it's fun to compare his numbers with Paredes because they're more similar than you would expect. But I also think, Coombe, looking at this weekend in terms of player-to-player comparisons, you look at Cam Smith and Matt Shaw, and you wonder about one versus the other, and you wonder which guy the Astros wanted first in those conversations about trade talks. And as it pertains to Matt Shaw, what's been going wrong with him, and how can he fix it?
He, you know, for Matty, I think he's got some things going on in his swing. When you watch him at the plate, he's having a lot of, there's a lot of movement with his head. There's, you know, he's getting back to some of that. And when your head is moving, and what I mean by that is your head is moving towards the pitcher, you're not seeing the baseball and you're not recognizing the pitch early enough. So we're seeing a lot of inside pitches that he's flinching and coming back that are strikes. And, you know, that just tells me that he's not picking up the ball real well. And then his swings are, you know, you're having the result that he's having. You know, he's getting jammed a lot. So he just, you know, there's got to be every hitter has these checks and balances in their game and in their stroke. And for him, his first and foremost is keeping his head still so he can recognize the pitch. It sounds very easy, but it is not. And he is dealing with some of that now. I just see a lot of check swings, a lot of half, you know, flinch and then falling off the plate, you know, because he thinks the ball's inside and it's, you know, it's not. So he's got to quiet that head down a little bit. And if he can do that, you know, when he does that, then his swing is okay. He had a couple swings yesterday that were very good. So, you know, those are some of the things he's got to work at.
So we saw two excellently pitched games, and now here you go into Houston. Cade Horton is going to pitch tonight. Colin Ray has something to prove maybe on Saturday. And Jameson Taillon, he bounces back pretty well, but he needs a bounce back on Sunday. What are you expecting from the pitching staff in this series?
Well, you hope that you get a great pitched series for the Cubs. I do believe, you know, like today now, power arms in this ballpark usually do pretty good. It's the guys that have you know, that are trying to pitch around the ballpark, so to speak, because of the short porch in the left. You know, you can make some mistakes and then they get you. And this team, you know, some of their hitters really know how to use that short porch and left, like the hitters used to and still do, I'm sure. I just don't see it as much in Fenway Park. So, you know, Cade tonight, he's got to be on the attack with his heater. And if he is, that's a great thing. And I expect J-Mo also to come back. Colin, to me, it's all about his fastball command. But J-Mo's an extreme guy that has to have great command, and he does usually. He's had last couple it has not been perfect command. He's left some balls in the middle of the plate, and he's paid the price for them. But there were six starts in a row, six or seven, that he went six plus and was just outstanding. So, you know, it's a slight correction for him. And hopefully he'll make that correction and get back on that streak he was on.
Coop, you're so good at answering hitting questions. I have to ask you about Michael Bush. I think he is a guy who, when you look at his numbers alone, you think, well, he's making an all-star run. This is a guy who's coming into his own, and you start ranking Cub hitters, and you don't go too far down the list until you get to Michael Bush. And then I stop myself because then I realize they don't trust him against left-handed hitting or pitchers because he's only got like 36 at-bats against lefties. I know he's only hitting 111, but how do you get better at something when you're not allowed to try to do it more often? And this is a guy that is an all-star caliber first baseman. So how do you explain and understand how they're treating Michael Bush with left-handers?
Well, it's to me, the idea of him hitting against left-handers, that's going to come. He's going to eventually do it. But that's not how the team was set up, David. The team was set up, you signed a high-profile winner in Justin Turner, and he was the guy that was going to play against left-handed pitching somehow, some way. Well, the way the team is set up right now, he's got to play first base, and that's where he's going to play. So that's, you know, you made that decision with him in spring training, and, you know, I don't know, you know, he has had his struggles this season, so how long that will last is to be determined. But at the end of the day, I just say celebrate with what Bushy's doing. He's the perfect guy to look at and go, he got an opportunity. He got traded from the Dodgers here. He got an opportunity, which is like getting a gold bar, to say, we're going to give you a chance to be a starting player in the big leagues. And let's see what you do with it. And what did he do with it? He ran with it like as good as you could possibly do. He worked his butt off at first base, and I watched it day after day after day from my booth with his work at first. Now he's become a really good defensive first baseman, and he's doing the same thing with his swing, and he's covering pitches and hitting the ball out of the ballpark, and I'm really happy for him. It just goes to show you some guys, they work hard, and the hard work is paying off. I love his whole story and what he has done for the Cubs. It's just a great way to show your young kids, this, if you do this, good things can happen. That's the Michael Bush story.
I'm really wondering if Jed, being as forthright as he's been, he's done interviews all over the place, and he's talked about needing a starting pitcher and seeking a starting pitcher. There have been reports that Mitch Keller is the guy that they're talking about, that they've been talking to Pittsburgh about him. Do you follow that sort of thing? Do players in the locker room hear all those rumors as they're going on? I'm just wondering, what does the transparency mean to the team?
I would say guys hear it, because a lot of times you don't have a choice. You know, there's a lot of people in the clubhouse, and there's a lot of questions being asked, and then there's social media and all the ways you can, you know, get on a computer, and then you see what's being said and or hear what's being said, and you know, so you hear it. But I would hope, you know, I did not play in this era of all this, the ability to get all this information, you know, constantly about what's right. being said. I would hope, Mike, that guys would not read it too much and just stay away from it and concentrate on, when you look in the mirror, on that guy. You know, that's the best thing you can do as a player, is concentrate on being a good winning teammate, and concentrate on your game and that guy in the mirror that you look at. That's the best thing you can do to help your team, is make sure you're covering yourself and doing what you're supposed to do, help your team win, and let the noise kind of be noise. It's easy to say. It's not easy to do, but some guys do a better job of it than others. But that was my way of just, you know what? If I do my job real well, I'm going to be just fine. That's what I would do.
Great stuff, Ron. Always a joy. Appreciate your time. Have a great weekend in Houston.
Yeah, enjoy the city.
We will, and you guys have a great weekend, too. Great to talk to you. Dust, we're back.
He's raising his fist in support and not shaking them at you.
No.
Right, exactly.
He's a happier man today.
Yes,
Great stuff.
That's good stuff. See
Thanks,
you,
Rod. God bless.
Thanks, Rod.
That is our guy, Ron Coomer.
Dustin is more Palencia than Contreras right now.
There you go.
Pounding his chest. Sweating.
No back sweats.
No back sweats this morning.
Brandon has those because he's got his he's got hockey sweater
yeah,
on.
Yeah, because it's draft night.
It's Mully and Haw at Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 of the Score.
We're back.
Boyd to Arenado. Ground ball to third. Diving stop by Shaw. Long throw, and he got him. What a play by Matt Shaw. You think about all the plays that Arenado has made over the years to rob opposing hitters of base hits. Here he gets a dose of his own medicine.
Yeah, this is a great play by Matty. One of the best he's made in the big league so far as he lays out for this ball. He ends up catching it in foul territory and is able to get to his feet, make a strong throw from foul territory and an accurate one. And Michael Busch with a great stretch to get Arenado by a step.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, the Score. And that was a great play. That was a couple days ago. And you saw Matt Shaw make an excellent stop and get up and throw across the field. And it was an excellent stretch.
He's been great defensively.
Busch. Yes, he
and
has.
And Busch did help him out. But Matt Shaw has been getting it done in the field. He has been above average and a plus defender since he got back from Iowa. And when you consider that he's playing basically this position for the first time at the major league level, it's even more impressive. It's inevitable, Mully, as the Cubs arrive in Houston for this weekend series against the Astros. It's inevitable to compare not just Kyle Tucker with Isaac Paredes because of the trade in the offseason, but Cam Smith and Matt Shaw. Because they're both, those are the two players who were the last two Cub first-round draft picks. 2023, Matt Shaw was taken 13th. Less than a year ago, on July 14th of last summer, Cam Smith was taken by the Cubs out of Florida State. He was part of the deal, and the Astros, much to everyone's surprise, can we agree on that? They promoted him immediately. He won the job. And on March 27th, he made his major league debut, one of two players from that draft class, last year's draft class, to make his major league debut. Rushed to the big leagues, and you look at his minor league games, it's just incredible how he played.
They don't exist.
32 minor league games from last year, 115 at-bats, and he's a major league starting right fielder, not at third base. Drafted as a third baseman, now he's in right field. Matt Shaw and Cam Smith, fascinating points of comparison this weekend.
I think they're such different positions, and I think that there's no doubt that Shaw's the better defensive player. But on offense, it's exactly the opposite. I think Cam Smith, I don't know that it's comparable.
Well, right now, Cam Smith, his WAR is 1.9. He's got pretty respectable but modest numbers, 271 batting average. His OPS is 744, 5 home runs, 28 runs batted in. He's hitting like a rookie. He's a rookie fitting into the lineup, and he's a rookie starter on a playoff team right now, or a division leader.
Mm-hmm.
It's impressive. Matt Shaw, in contrast, his WAR is 1.0. His batting average is 215. That's after a miserable start. His OPS is 596. He's only got 2 home runs and 10 runs batted in. So right now, Cam Smith is the better major leaguer. As you project out, it's impossible to know which guy will be better over the course of their careers. The hope will be that they both have productive all-star caliber careers.
But I do think that if, let's just say, that they didn't make that trade and they still had Cam Smith, wouldn't he be in Iowa?
Yes.
There's no doubt about
that. I don't think there's any question.
No. If they didn't make that trade and Paredes was playing third base, I don't know that Matt Shaw would be here. I don't know that Bellinger would have been traded. It seems like he'd be playing in the outfield, and there'd be no room for a Cam Smith.
I don't disagree with that. But I also think even if you don't go that far, and let's say the Astros would have taken Matt Shaw instead of Cam Smith, I don't know that Cam Smith would be in the Cubs infield right now. Because I think that still would have been a very quick path through the system, and I just don't think that he would have been
if the trade didn't happen, then Paredes would be the third baseman in Chicago.
Yes, but he would be blocked, but the fact that he's not playing third base in Houston either. That's the thing.
He's playing the outfield. Yeah.
I just wonder if you know, you find a spot for somebody who makes such an impression in your spring training camp, however Cam Smith won the job. It was a huge surprise that he did. Remember, they brought his parents in, and that was the whole thing.
What happened to the right fielder? I think, David, when you look at stuff like that, it's like impossible to figure out. But one of the questions it leaves me with is, how good are the outfielders now that the Cubs have in the minor leagues? And if you're trading them, how good could they be? You know, Owen Casey, we've never really seen him get a look. He's never really had an opening, never had a chance. I don't know how good he is. Is he better than Cam Smith? He's been playing here for a while. And Kevin Alcantara, same question. How good is he, and how good could they be, and how impactful might either of those guys be when you get to the end of the season?
Well, I think that those are good questions. And when you look at what those guys are doing at Iowa right now this season, they are hitting like you would want them to hit if you are Jed Hoyer. They are really making themselves tradable. they're making themselves attractive to other teams if they're evaluating Cub prospects in the minors. This was just a couple days ago, and it was an interesting tweet in context of what you're talking about. Alex Cohen, who works for Marquee, this got my attention because going through the Twitter machine and scrolling through, halfway through the 2025 season, again, this is probably the 25th, so just 2 days ago, but Owen Casey, 22 home runs and 36 doubles. Moises Ballesteros, 16 home runs and 30 doubles. Kevin Alcantara, 14 home runs and 30 doubles and 18 stolen bases with an OPS of 734.
Wow.
Jonathan Long, who is the guy nobody talks about but has the numbers at first base that you really respect, 18 dingers, 22 doubles with an OPS of 883.
I read a story, I don't know if it was yesterday or this morning, because I did some stuff before I left the house, but I read a story from Tommy Birch about Jordan Wicks, how Jordan Wicks feels that he can help the big league club. Jordan Wicks started out the season, had some issues, and it took him a while. Then he got hurt, and now he's come back. And in his last two starts, he's really come around, and he's really he's 25 years old, David, and he's a guy.
I know, Molly.
I'm not discounting him. That's a guy that might be able to come up and help you if indeed. Now, that you wouldn't have said that a few weeks ago, but apparently he's gone through this latest injury battle, and he's come back, and he's looking better, according to – I'll have to go back and reread the story because – I was half delirious.
Well, I just imagine when you say that you're reading a newspaper on your garage floor, which is immaculate.
It is beautiful.
And you're just going through catching up on Jordan Wicks.
I no longer need any newspaper on my garage floor. I don't need to protect it from anything.
I know that. Beautiful. I know it's so beautiful.
I don't want to drag
spotless
down.
Spotless and immaculate, and your car feels embarrassed when it has a speck of dust.
If I have an alley party?
I would definitely attend your
party. That's kind of you.
Back to Jordan Wicks, though. I wouldn't rule him out, and let's make a mental note to ourselves the next time we have Tommy Hadovy on to ask him about Jordan Wicks and how ready he may be to contribute. Let's go back a couple seasons. Jordan Wicks was the first man up.
Oh, I know.
He was the prospect. He was, I don't want to say Cade Horton before Cade Horton, but he was the guy that you were looking forward to making an impact at the major league level.
And I always thought he was pretty professional when he was up here. I liked the way he pitched.
He gave up had a propensity to give up the long ball, but he also was a young guy. You say he's 25. He also pitches from the left side. Now, I know the Cubs have stocked their bullpen with veterans who have been retooled and fixed and all the things that the pitching lab in Chicago seems to do to veterans. But I think you could find a role for Jordan Wicks. I like that idea. And you don't know. It's a long season. Injuries are going to come up, but I wouldn't rule him out.
Dustin, did you say that you'd prefer him to Mitch Keller? Is that what you insinuated?
No, I said I would prefer that they give Jordan Wicks a shot if they need to go to the minors before I'd give Ben Brown a shot. Right? I think Ben
needs. You don't
want to
bring him back up.
I think he needs to sit for a little bit. Not sit, not do anything. I think he needs to get things right. I think he's got all the talent in the world, but I think I'd give Jordan Wicks an opportunity to come back in a spot start situation. Mm-hmm. Then bring Ben Brown up just because we need a guy. Like, don't do that. Because you have that guy. You have Colin Ray, right? But I don't think Colin Ray's long-term success is in.
We'll find out
the
tomorrow night
rotation.
How confident you feel about
exactly
Colin Ray.
Right.
Tough ballpark for him to pitch in, given the way he's been pitching. And Colin Ray this weekend, this is my prediction while Dustin goes on vacation to deal with his back sweats. I think when you talk about Colin Ray over the weekend, if we come in here Monday and he got rocked, we're going to be clamoring for Jed to go get that pitcher quicker, sooner rather than later. Because this is a five-man rotation now, and he is the fifth guy.
Right.
And this weekend, depending on what Horton does tonight, I got to be honest about that too. If Horton doesn't have a great outing, and Ray doesn't have a good outing, and Houston is a good team offensively,
right,
then we may come in here Monday morning thinking, all right, Jed, you said that you're going to go get a starter. Go get that starter.
And they're very good at home.
They're very good at home.
Very good at
Houston's
home.
A very good team. Not to be taken lightly.
It's because they use that drumming to they don't do that.
I had earlier in the show, Molly, that you were going to get to the Astros cheating scandal.
Did you have that?
The over-under, okay. Much earlier.
You and Brandon had a little side bet there?
No, I just made that up on the last one.
Okay,
But don't you think that's something we should always remember?
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, I suppose.
Right.
They cheated their way to a championship.
So a couple of numbers, and you've been sharing some good numbers, but I want to share a couple decent numbers. 30-13 at home and 29-21 against teams with a winning record. So that combination,
talking about the Astros, the Cubs,
right.
The Astros.
That's where when, wow, Dustin, you think they only win one game, and if they lose Friday night, they get swept? That's why.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a problem.
We've got to get to Mike Palm. Mike Palm's going to join us next. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, proudly presents the star of our show,
Mike Palm, Vice President of Operations of Circa, the D, and Golden Gate.
Vegas! Vegas, baby! Vegas!
Twitter at Mike Palm Circa.
Why don't I take you somewhere that you've never been?
Where's that?
Vegas? Let's head to Vegas with Mike Palm, sponsored by Circa Sports Illinois. Sports betting the way it should be, with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Remember, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas.
I don't care. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. It was a delight to talk to Mike Palm, one of God's great men. He joins us on the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire, aturo.com. Mike, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, fellas. Doing great. How are you guys?
Well, I'm wondering how NBA futures work with the draft. We know that free agency period's coming up, but I'm very curious about when people jump in. When do you see the action really pick up when you start talking about the NBA?
Some people will dive in as soon as that game 7 ended last Sunday and we opened up the numbers, and you'll get a few pros diving in on what they think are opportunities, mostly on teams that are longer odds. You get some casual money come in. We opened the Lakers 15-1 and they got that down a little bit to 13-1. I mean, at the top of the draft, it was pretty much according to Hoyle, not a lot of huge surprises. Until we post the regular season win totals, I don't think you're really going to see much impact of the draft, because these teams that are getting these top guys, not a lot of them are going to really compete for an NBA title. That's why they're drafting so high. You knew Dallas was going to get flagged, so that's built in a little bit. I know a couple sharp guys that think Dallas has a legit shot of making a run next year. Obviously, depending on when Kyrie comes back, but they're high on Flag. We opened Flag Rookie of the Year minus $2, so pretty heavy favorites, considering a lot of things could go wrong. But, of course, that being said, with Kyrie not going to be playing for a significant portion of the year, he will get a lot of minutes and touches, you would think. So, you know, some people dove into that market as well on Rookie of the Year.
Will the NHL draft tonight move the needle in any way, whether it's betting on who goes where or on how it changes next season's odds?
Not really, David. More if there's some free agency moves. It's going to move it more when veterans move around. It's going to move things more. You know, is Mitch Marner going to end up in Las Vegas? What's Edmonton going to do? I think they're going to go after John Gibson of Anaheim. I think Dostal is clearly the number one there, and I think Anaheim might be willing to try to acquire some young players. I'm high on the Ducks. I think the Ducks are a playoff team this year. I mean, they made a 21-point improvement last year. If they can keep moving in that direction, and of course they get Quenneville, which suppresses their odds a little bit. I put some pizza money on them at 100-1 to win the cup. If you can get them to the playoffs and they can win a series, you can have some fun with it.
I always wonder, like, it seems to me that the NFL is king and people are betting the NFL with whether there's futures there or not, and everybody has an idea and a sense of it. Is that significantly different than what we're talking about with the NBA or with even Major League Baseball?
Did we lose Mike?
Baseball. You got me?
You're back.
You're back.
Yep, you're back.
All right. The most money in terms of per sport is baseball because of the sheer number of games. But every week we have people coming in and betting NFL futures. I mean, they're betting the Vikings with both hands. They're betting the Rams. They're betting the Broncos, if that gives anybody information. We had to move the Vikings win total from 8.5 to 9.5 because so much money was coming in on the Vikings. And people are betting the Vikings to win the NFC as well. We had them 25-1. They're now down to 9-1.
That's bad news because, as I recall, you told us that they and the Bears were both 8.5, and it was kind of a battle between them. So there's more people believing in the Vikings than anyone else.
That's for sure. The Bears, the juice on the under 8.5 continues to grow. Remember, that it was favored a little bit over 8.5. Now under 8.5 is minus 145.
Wow. What did Aaron Rodgers signing with the Steelers do to their futures, and did that get some interest?
What it did when he signed was nothing. We moved it ahead of that. When he didn't sign with the Vikings, we made the assumption he was going to sign with the Steelers, and it moved their win total up a half game, I think. But we ahead of that, when he didn't sign with the Vikings, we already moved the number just on the belief that he was going to the Steelers. And, you know, people were wringing their hands about, oh, it's so late. And, I mean, we're already into May and June, and he hasn't signed. Remember when Favre signed with the Vikings, it was August 12th.
Wow.
So we forget recent history.
Yeah. Hey, Mike, when we talk about the people kind of jumping in and things changing, does the baseball trade deadline, are those futures seem like, I read something that on April whatever, if you're leading the division on June 1, you're going to win the division. Only one team didn't do so last year. That doesn't really the trade deadline change how people look at baseball, or is that just not enough of a jump?
It does, Molly, but there's so much more money bet into the baseball futures early in the year, to your point. I mean, maybe if the Cubs pick up a big arm, but what's it going to change? At 10 cents on their odds to win the Central, something like that? If a big pitcher acquisition could possibly mean something. I think it's like built into the Dodgers price that everybody already knows they're going to go out and get, you know, whatever they want. So there's not too much there. By the way, talking about baseball, I think these Brewers are a really interesting team. This kid, Mizorowski, is amazing to watch pitch. I mean, when he got called up, we put him at 25-1 for NL Rookie of the Year. He's already minus 120 after three starts.
Oh, my gosh. But he does throw 100.
He's impressive. Yeah. He definitely is impressive.
Wow. Hey, thanks, Mike. That's great.
He needs to develop a third pitch, though. Once we get into August and these teams start to see him a second time, if he doesn't have a third pitch, I think the performance won't stay at those levels. But thanks, guys. Appreciate the time.
Great stuff, Mike. Thank you. That is Mike Palm. Great stuff. I find that fascinating how people pick that apart. Stacey King joins us next. We will talk about the man from the Give Me the Hot Sauce podcast. Stacey joins us. Mully and Haw on the Score.